Hey, what's up? What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Periodic Table. I am, of course, your host, Brandon Hanna. You might know me. I'm a mechanical engineer. You might have seen me hosting a couple shows over at AfterBuzz TV, the Popcorn Talk Network, or the Movie Trivia Showdown. And, well, this is the weekly science news show that we do over here on my YouTube channel. We just talk about the hottest science news stories of the week. And I think we got some fun ones for you all today. But before we get into all that, I do have an amazing panel of hosts with me. To my left, your right, you might know her from the Movie Trivia Showdown as well. She's the inner geekdom champion of the world. And she's also a nuclear reactor operator / nuclear operations instructor. She knows a lot about fission, and we might be getting into that today. It's Mara Kanopic.
Hello, hello, internet. How's it going?
I think they're saying it's going great. It's going great. It's great. Well, it's great to have you here. So it's always a great show having you on. So welcome. Thank you for coming back.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always nice to talk about atoms.
Yes. Well, we're going to get into that for sure. But before we do, you've seen him on this show many times. He's a TV host, actor, and comedian. And you might also know him from AfterBuzz TV or Black Hollywood Live, both in front of the camera and writing articles. It is James Maple.
Hey, 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 party people. Happy Friday. Excited to talk about science today, for sure.
Yes. Super excited to have you back as well, James. Thanks, it's sir. Always great to have you on the show. I know it's been a while to have both of you. So it's great to have you both together. Should be a lot of fun. We do have an amazing show for you all today. Our number one story is DNA can be collected from air. Scientists are showing this for the first time. That's going to be a really fascinating one to get into. I think we also have the science and technology that can help save the ocean. Very topical, very important for us to get into that one. And also a third story today before we get into our special segment, because how could I not talk about this having James and Mara on the show? We have uranium snowflakes could set off thermonuclear explosions of dead stars. That is fascinating. And of course, we do have a special segment bringing back Let's Get Social, talking about the viral TikTok that explains vaccine science. It can make you laugh. It can teach you a little bit about how vaccines work. And well, that's kind of like what this show is all about, learning a little bit about science and having fun along the way. But before we get into that, let's jump up to our number one story for this week. And it is DNA can be collected from the air. So apparently this technique could be used in conservation work, forensic investigations, and even to study the transmission of airborne diseases such as COVID-19. So scientists at Queen Mary University of London have shown for the first time ever that DNA can be collected from the air. And like I said, the finding could provide new techniques for forensic researchers, anthropologists, and even help understanding airborne diseases. And the team looked into whether environmental DNA could be collected from air samples and used to identify animal species. And turns out you can. Most similar studies to date have focused on the collection of DNA, which they call eDNA for environmental DNA. They've collected it from water, but this is the first time they're doing it from air. And I think this is really fascinating and could have a lot of potential future implications for many different fields of work and fields of study, like I mentioned. But before we get into it any deeper, Mara, let's go over to you first. What were your overall thoughts on this article? Are you optimistic about the possibilities of collecting DNA from air? Do you think this is a good thing?
Well, I have to say first, I went through a flurry of emotions reading this article because I was fascinated. So I was feeling a lot of curiosity. I was feeling happiness about learning something new. And then I saw that picture of the naked mole rat and I immediately felt so much disgust and fear. I couldn't eat anything the rest of the day. So thank you for that. But no, truly though, especially now with how topical airborne disease is, of course that's fascinating, but I am obsessed with true crime. So naturally my brain first went to, okay, so now if someone plans a murder, they need to wear an N95. That's what we're learning. Do you remember that old Ryan Gosling movie, Murder by Numbers? I can't remember if he and Michael Pitt wore N95s, but now I feel like I have to go back and check. So, I mean, for furthering our understanding and epidemiologists' studies, I think that that's interesting, but also for crime scene analysis and, you know, murder and stuff, that's also very interesting.
Yeah, I think so for sure. And like you said, it was kind of their proof of concept to see if they can collect the DNA from a naked mole rat that was floating around in the air. And like, and it turns out that you can, and that's pretty mind blowing to me. James, let's go over to you next. Were you just as enthralled by this article as we were? Was there any specific part of it that stood out to you as like the most important takeaway?
I agree with both of you. To be honest, my kind of thought process was similar to Mara's, in that I kind of went to the whole crime scene investigation too. I was like, okay, well, what does that mean for criminal intent and everything like that? I also thought it was pretty interesting too. I don't know. Maybe I have misread the article, but it seemed as though the discovery of the human DNA airborne, it seemed as if it were like a mistake, and it just happened to find it as they were looking for the mole rat DNA. But one thing that really stood out to me that I was kind of thinking about in the background as I was reading this article was, remember a couple weeks ago, there was news about like a lunar ark that they were collecting DNA samples from Earth and like sending them to the moon. I thought that, obviously the correlation is the DNA sample itself, but you know, I never really even articulated the thought of having it be an airborne DNA sample that we could collect. And I'll be curious to know what new, you know, ramifications could that have on that effort and with the lunar arc that they were working on as well?
Yeah, definitely. So it says here in the article that this approach was initially used for ecological assessments. They wanted to use this as an opportunity to investigate like animal communities in hard to reach environments, but then later on able to discover that, wow, this has so many different applications. Like we've already said, the forensics investigations of the use of that is probably the most interesting. I know a lot of people out there are like listening to a lot of true crime podcasts. We watch a lot of TV shows about true crime. And this also has the potential to be one of the most useful applications to catch people who commit, you know, violent crimes. I think that is a really positive takeaway from this article, but also the transmission of airborne diseases is also something very important and very topical today, obviously, with everything going on with COVID-19. So this one, I really thought this was fascinating. This was for them to do this for the first time and to kind of like almost like fall into it by accident, like science does in many ways, is like you make these discoveries when you're not expecting to, right? So I think that is really cool. And so Mara, I just want to throw it back over to you next before we move on to our next story. Was there anything else in this article that really stood out to you that you thought maybe like, wow, this is something I never thought of before, and this is a really cool application of this science?
Sort of. I mean, James and I have already like spitballed it far further than it has gone, but it said specifically that it identified DNA as in just by species. So I would be curious to keep following this and see if they, you know, because different types of DNA samples and quantities and complexities and whether or not it's been tainted by anything else affects the ability to pare it down to like, you know, a one in X billion chance that the DNA belongs to you or someone else. So whether or not it's simply going to be effective in the current space of science, is it just going to be able to say this is human DNA, or is it going to be to say that this is Brandon Hanna's human DNA? So I'd be curious to see how they hone this process, because I know we've talked about what it could do, but right now it seemed like, according to the article, it can only identify things by species. So I would just like to keep our fingers on the pulse and see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. This sounds like a good story to keep our eye on down the road. And how dare you put me at the scene of the crime? I was never there. A human was there, but you'll never be able to prove that it was me.
You are the hitman. I didn't work out of nowhere.
And so, yeah, James, let's go over to you next. Is there any other takeaways that we haven't gotten into? Do you think that this is something that they could develop further down the road, or do you think they'll only be able to get as far as saying this is human DNA, this is mole rat DNA, this is cat, dog, you name it?
You know, I'd like to think so. You know, we have certain forensic sciences now with, you know, fingerprints and dental impressions and what have you. So I'd like to hope that potentially down the line we'd be able to go further than just beyond a a certain species, as Mara said. It would be interesting, though, to see what that could, like I said, how that could happen with like criminal investigations. And I'd be just curious to see the correlation between the science and the criminality of the whole of it all.
Yeah, definitely. Really cool story, and definitely something that hopefully we can follow up on it in a future episode to see how far it advanced. So we will definitely want to keep our eye on that. But before we move on to our next story, I just want to thank everyone who's watching right now. I see we got a few people in the live chat. We got Aiden Kosick, BCD, and Ferris Muthana. Thank you so much for being here, joining in on the conversation. And I know we're doing this a day earlier in the week than we normally do. So thank you for taking time to join us. Please, guys, if you're watching, like the video. Leave a comment down below if you're watching after the fact and you want to leave your thoughts. I would love to reply back and get a conversation going about these great scientific topics. And hit that subscribe button if you're interested in watching along with us every single week here, because we do have a lot of fun talking about what's going on in the world of science. And speaking of which, we do have an article here that I think could have a lot of positive ramifications in the future. And that is the science and technology that can help save the ocean. So guys, apparently only 19% of the ocean is mapped on the face of the earth. There's so much about the ocean that we don't know what's there. And apparently having a better understanding of the ocean floor, the ocean itself, pollution and litter and fish migrations and the coral reefs and all that stuff. There is so much regarding the ocean and climate and the overall health of the planet and obviously all the species who inhabit it. So we have, and it says here in the article that here on Earth, we have more detailed maps of Mars than we do of our own ocean to kind of put it into perspective. And so James, before I get any further into this, because there is a lot to absorb, speaking of the ocean absorbing heat, which is mentioned in this article, but there's a lot to break down. I want to throw it over to you first. What is your overall impression of this article? What was something that stood out to you right away about maybe the importance of understanding our oceans better and how it correlates to our climate health and overall health as a planet? Or maybe was there a certain way of the technology involved that really piqued your interest? What did you think?
Well, the first thing that came to mind for sure, as a kid, I remember like one of the first like scientific like aha moments that I had was what you kind of already stated, in that we know more about the surface of Mars or the moon or even outer space in general than we do about our own oceans. I remember being like maybe 10 or 11 in science class and like being like, wow, but like the ocean's right there. How do we not know? So I had a base lust for this story and going into it. I think one of the biggest things that in reading the article, I feel like it was broken into two sections. The first section I felt was kind of damning. It felt very like anxiety inducing and very heavy. And then I think the second part of it really showed the scientific breakthroughs we've made. I have to say that I loved the connection between the political struggle, the economic struggle, the ecological struggle that it mentioned. I think it mentioned about how the mapping could affect, a communications beacon and put it into the ocean, and how where's the right place to put it, as it could affect, mussel beds or coral reefs. Those are the little things I think that many people overlook, including myself, when it comes to like the ocean and its importance. Another takeaway I got from this article was there are a few things I think on this planet that connect us all. I would say climate is one and the ocean is another. I'm sure there are many, many more. I love towards the end of the article where it talks about the different programs that are kind of happening underneath our nose that we don't really know about and are making like massive strides to protect the oceans that we do have. So I thought that quick snippet that the author wrote about the different programs and the benchmarks they have for 2030 and 2040 were great to know that there are, policies and people in place to better the ocean for all of us moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. It is good to know that there are people like working on this and that care, and that this article, reading this article, made me realize just how much of a problem it is. I mean, we've all known like about like pollution and its effect on our oceans and our overall effect on the planet. But this article really highlighted for me just how useful it could be to have our ocean properly mapped when it comes to like overfishing and habitat destruction, as we said, like pollution. But also the technology really stood out to me of like using robotics and like artificial intelligence and like decades of data all collected and like accumulated together to map out the ocean as much as possible, so that we know as much as possible, because it is, the ocean is so vast and covers so much of the planet, and it's utilizing the same technology that we already have to map the surface of other worlds, but not so much our own. So Mara, I want to throw it over to you next. What was your overall impressions of this article? Did you learn anything new for the first time? Did anything really stand out to you as super exciting or optimistic when it comes to better understanding our oceans or the technology that's involved?
Well, it's interesting that you picked this article, because I help Dan do some research, and I don't think it's like a huge spoiler. I think he's probably already said it, but next week's episode of his All My Movies is going to be for Titanic. So lots of special features with James Cameron going in his DSV and exploring the ocean. And the fact that you mentioned the AI specifically, that was one thing where when they were kind of discussing how it computes this data and how it works, this is Skynet. I'm pretty sure the future, this is 100% going to be our undoing. We're going to try to save the planet, and in turn, we're going to cause our own human destruction. But mutually exclusive of that, I also thought that its concerns about biodiversity, which some of the most biodiverse environments are the ones that we have no idea exist in the bottom of the ocean, specifically because man can't affect them, at least not yet. So the idea that this is something that we can start bringing more into the shallows, and like you mentioned, like if communications cables, I think for it was like a military naval application that they had specified communications lines or something, that it's not just simply putting them somewhere, it's where you... should put them, where you can put them, because all of that stuff, even just something as simple as a cable, can affect the biodiversity of an environment, which is so incredibly important. So I thought that that was a really specific point that they didn't draw on it too much, but that's something I'm really interested in. So
yeah, definitely. And I hope we don't have a Skynet situation on our hands. I know we had Ben Goddard on the show a few weeks ago, and he was very skeptical wearing his tinfoil hat. So I think he would be in much agreement with you about the worries there. But for the time being, I see this as a very positive thing. You know, like, you know, James mentioned, like they have like a timeline, like they're of how they're trying to accomplish a certain set of goals. You know, we have here that the United Nations has declared 2021 through 2030 the decade of ocean science for sustainable development. And they say it's like the Paris Climate Accord for the ocean. So I think that is a really great thing for, you know, the United Nations to kind of come together, because, I mean, the ocean is, you know, as big as the whole world, right? So it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, immediately right off the bat, I see this article and I'm like, wow, that is like, it's really cool that they are working on mapping the oceans, and the technology involved is really interesting. But then what do you do when you have all of this data? And the article does like kind of get into it. It kind of can like dictate where like offshore wind turbines are like most optimally located, like where will they have the least impact on like commercial fishing and like ocean life. And I know, you know, from my own studies when I was in school, underwater cables, you know, emit electromagnetic waves that could damage ocean life. They could change fish migrations and affect the coral reefs and all that stuff. So there's a lot to consider there about where you lay these cables and the EMI that emitted out of it. So and so on. There's just a lot to kind of like take in and digest in this article. I think it's really fascinating, and there's just like so many like avenues and different fields of technology and science involved, all kind of working towards a common goal, which I think is great. And I think it really kind of like shows to what we can kind of do as a society when we kind of come together and connect all of our different all of our different backgrounds, and so it's, I think this is really cool. So that would kind of be like my main takeaway, is just that the United Nations and everyone's kind of coming together to do this, but also be like learning about, okay, this is really great once we have this data, but like, what can we do afterwards once we have this data to actually create positive change in the ocean and in the world. James, let me throw it right back to you. Is there any other closing thoughts on this article? Any other takeaways that maybe we didn't get into in our discussion so far?
You know, the only one, it's very, very small thing. It was in the article, they were talking about the output data of GIS, and they said the output data they use was a similar method they used to track COVID-19 cases. I thought that was a pretty interesting, in the article, it was very short, maybe a sentence or two long. I would be interested to see the connection between the mapping, like exactly how the mapping of our oceans and the mapping of COVID-19 have a correlation. So to go back to your point, Brandon, it's just so interesting to see how something, you know, we're tracking the topography of the oceans essentially, and we're applying that to, you know, tracking a novel virus. So I thought that was a pretty interesting thing, and it's definitely something I didn't expect to learn in reading the article.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is really fascinating. If there is, like, you know, some sort of correlation between the type of data of, like, you know, something that's mapping COVID-19 cases and being able to like map the ocean and other things and how it all kind of like integrates together. I think that is really fascinating and something to look into for sure. And so Mara, I want to throw it over to you one more time. It says here that their goal is to map the entire ocean floor by the year 2030. Do you think that is a realistic goal? Do you think that is fast enough to implement the positive change that we need going forward? Because obviously climate change is a very real threat, and there's so many other different, horrible things that the humans do to the environment. Do you think a 2030 goal of mapping the ocean floor is realistic, helpful, beneficial? And did you have any more, anything else about the article that you wanted to speak on that maybe we hadn't touched on yet?
I mean, I think that unfortunately some of it does come down to funding, which can ultimately boil down to politics, not just here in the United States, but globally too. We're not the only place that has differences of opinion regarding climate change. I think that, scientists have said that it is our lifetime where we are going to decide whether or not we're going to save the future of the planet. So yeah, I think that having that information at our hands is going to be incredibly important. But channeling this into my micro public service announcement, us individual people, we can affect incredible change. So for example, I drink a lot of beverages, but you know what? I use titanium straws with my cups. I don't use any plastic straws anymore. I don't recommend the glass ones because I'm so terrified of them breaking, but
I agree with that more.
Really cute, super trendy. This is titanium. I can throw it in my dishwasher. I don't have to use that little thingy and clean it out myself. So I would really encourage everyone to try to minimize their own use of disposable plastic items. I keep a little container with a fork, a spoon, and chopsticks with me in the car and in my bag. So that way, if I was going to get like takeaway from somewhere and they were going to give me a single use plastic spork or something, I can decline it and say no thank you. I use, you know, recycled hand towels for when I do use a paper towel. If not, I always use hand towels. Just little, simple, tiny, microscopic things that we all do as individual people, when there's over 7 billion of us on the planet, can affect enormous change. So PSA over, but please take that into consideration, folks.
No, that's very well said. We actually just got some metal straws of our own in the house. So we're right there with you. I'm trying to cut down my paper towel use. I use too much. I get yelled at sometimes, but it's okay. I'm working on it. And I see we also got, you know, Christina Vassallo in the chat, who was on the show last week, and Sabrina Ramirez, of course, as always, and Raul Alejandro Mendoza, who you've seen on the channel here before. Welcome. Thank you guys for joining in. It's time to move on to our next story, which I think is one that James and Mara are excited to get into. And so let's just jump right into it. Uranium snowflakes in parentheses it has here, could set off a thermonuclear explosions of dead stars. So white dwarf stars could go supernova in response to nuclear fission caused by uranium crystals. So we have tiny crystals of uranium that can set off these explosions within a dead star. That and physicists are proposing this. And it, they call it a cosmic version of a thermonuclear bomb. So expired stars called white dwarfs slowly cool as they age. And in the process, heavy elements such as uranium begin to crystallize, forming snowflakes in stars' cores. And if enough uranium clumps together, which they say is about the mass of a grain of sand, it could initiate a chain of nuclear fission reactions or the splitting of atomic nuclei. So I think this is a really cool article. It's a short article, but I think there are some really cool takes away. And I know we're all kind of space geeks on this show here today. And I know, Mara, you are a huge fan of nuclear fission and fusion and different types of dwarf stars, if you will. So I want to throw it over to you first. What was your overall thoughts on this article? Did you potentially learn something new reading this article that maybe you didn't know before? Or was there just anything in general that piqued your interest?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as far as the application of nuclear power, we really only studied terrestrial uses of uranium. So I was really fascinated by that concept, especially because, I mean, the idea that when they mentioned the mass of a grain of sand, that makes me think that this must be of incredibly high enrichment, which is really fascinating because, you know, we have to like use centrifuges to enrich uranium here, and different enrichments can apply to different things like just regular nuclear power generation or naval nuclear power, which is far more enriched, or weapons grade. So I was really interested in the idea that without them defining it, my intuition and my studies say that that would probably be very high enrichment. So part of me says, why don't we just go get some of this stuff from space? That could that could happen. In my headcanon, that's where we go scientifically, is we just start getting uranium from space. But I like the idea that they're saying that they can now, they're theorizing that where normally this would have to have an interaction with a planet that, sorry, I scared the cat. That this can now, these type, I think it was a 1A supernova or something, that it can happen without that. So they're completely reformulating their theory on how this, like, what is the inciting incident for this to occur? So the idea that we're even now still with, as much as we know about space compared to the ocean, as we just learned, that we're still finding out and reshaping our ideas of how things happen in space.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really a fascinating kind of application of all this stuff that we really only understand like in terms of like a hands-on experience here on Earth. What was the biggest takeaway for me was there was one sentence, a paraphrase from Matt Kaplan of Illinois State University. He said that the effect is akin to a hydrogen bomb, a powerful thermonuclear weapon in which fission reaction triggers fusion. That was really crazy to me because I don't know too much about nuclear power and fission and fusion, but the idea of a fission reaction triggering fusion, that was something that I was not familiar with until reading this article. So that immediately caught my attention and makes me want to learn more. So James, I want to throw it over to you next. Was there anything like that that you saw in this article that made you want to kind of jump down a rabbit hole of nuclear fusion and fission and really kind of like pique your interest and make you learn something new about space that maybe you didn't know before?
I think you two touched on my main points. I don't know if a thing called cosmic anxiety exists, but after reading this article, I definitely have it for our listeners. I just want to read the opening sentence to this article and you'll understand what I mean. It said, tiny crystals of uranium could set off massive explosions within a dead star, physicists say, making for a cosmic version of a nuclear bomb. Like, that's the opening sentence to this article. And I feel like it added to my like cosmic anxiety. I feel like I have a lot of like irrational fears, one of which is like driving behind a truck with logs on it after watching Final Destination 2. We'll never do that. So I feel like this was an added, this is a new addition to my like daily irrational anxieties. Overall though, I thought it was super interesting. I'm not the expert on fusion or fission, nor on space, just have a deep interest for it. So this was something that I didn't know. I kind of knew the rough elements of the story itself. But like Mara said, it's just always interesting how you know, space science is ever changing. And though this is just a theory, you know, many things that we thought were theories have been proven to be fact. So I hope one day we get to see something like this happen very, 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 very far away. I thought this was a super interesting article, and I love, like, Brandon, I think this is a great choice having Amara and myself on in the topic of the article itself. So, and also the name of the article itself is called Uranium Snowflakes. I just thought that was so catchy and funny.
That's such a good band name.
Right?
All right, guys, we're all going to pick up some instruments, and that's going to be our band name going forward. I really thought, you know, having both of you on, this was a great article. So it's kind of why I tacked it on as like one extra additional article for this week. This is interesting because it kind of like helps us like learn more about space and like stars in general, because it kind of says here in the closing paragraph that we know that white dwarfs stars are explosion prone, and they're the source of a blast called a type 1A supernova, and that normally up until recently to our knowledge, these explosions only happen when a white dwarf pulls matter off of a companion star. But now, with this discovery, they're realizing that actually a small fraction of these 1A supernovas could happen without the need for another star. It could happen internally from these snowflakes, if you will. So even though it doesn't affect my day-to-day life here on Earth, I think this is a really fascinating discovery. And like I said, it immediately piqued my interest to learn more about fission and fusion, and two things that I initially thought were like kind of like two sides of the same nuclear coin can sometimes go hand in hand. So Mara, I do want to throw it over to you one more time before we be moving on to our special segment. Was there anything else that you wanted to address with this article or nuclear fission as a whole?
Yes, I would really be curious to know. I almost got a job working at Los Alamos, but they called me for an interview after I'd already accepted another job. So I had to decline no matter how much I really wanted to work there. But I would be really curious to know how this sort of information is affecting research, because I mean, my dream was always to just do research rather than just like split atoms all day long to make somebody power for their blender. But, you know, whatever happens, happens. But for people that are less familiar with fission, because it's not something that's really focused on much in like secondary school or university level curriculum, unless you are focusing on an engineering science, there's a really fantastic YouTube video. It's like a million years old, but it's on YouTube. Imagine a room full of mouse traps with little ping pong balls on them. Fission is such an amazing, fantastic sort of thing that happens. And it just requires a tipping point. And I mean, bear in mind, we're talking like subatomic sort of stuff. So, but take one little ping pong ball. And what if I gave it to James and I said, James, throw that ping pong ball over to those mouse traps. Well, it's going to hit at least one of them. And then it's going to go off. And it's probably going to set off like three or four or five, which is going to set off 25 or 50 or 100. That is what fission is. So if you ever want to learn a little bit more at just a basic rudimentary level, go check out the mousetrap fission explanation, because it's really fun to watch because they actually do it.
Yeah, that sounds great. Actually, you actually just reminded me of like a meme that I saw the other day, because I follow like these like engineering meme groups on Facebook, and one of them was like, it was like a scientist like explaining like how amazing and powerful nuclear fission can be, and then the engineer is just like, all right, well, I'm gonna take this, I'm gonna heat up water, the steam's gonna make this turbine spin, and then we're gonna have power from that. And then the scientist is just like, but what about all this other stuff? It's like, nah, steam make turbine go.
It's true, really. Like, it all boils down to you know, creating like current carrying conductor in a magnetic field, something spinning to make something else move to generate power, or like mechanical agitation for like a propeller or something. So it's really simple when you look at it.
Yeah, definitely simple, but really fascinating when you kind of like get into the nuts and bolts of it all. So it's really cool, and I thank you for sharing your expertise on the subject. It's always great always great to have that. So let's move on to our special segment for the week. Let me pull it up here, guys. So we have Let's Get Social. We're talking about a viral TikTok that explains vaccine science. So we have this really good article here about a TikTok. I'm trying to sift through my notes here. Vic Krishna is the name of the TikToker, if you want to go and follow him right now. So he has this amazing TikTok where he explains that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines work, and it kind of like with the goal of taking a complex scientific topic and like simplifying it and making it fun and easy to digest, which is what we kind of like try to do on this show. But not so much, but you know, the article says here, it's a super fun watch. It's a horror film parody, which immediately catches my interest, including a monster with spiky fork hands, people disappearing into thin air, a concerned scientist. And it's a family friendly video. So this could be a great thing to show kids, to kind of explain to them how these vaccines work, because there is a lot of uncertainty out there. A lot of people, as we talked about on the show, people who there's a fear about obviously vaccines. And you know, it's important once people, I think, for people to understand how these vaccines work and why they work. I think it helps put people's mind at ease and encourages more people to get vaccinated, which is what we all want, because obviously we want the world to be a safer, healthier place and kind of go back to a little bit more sense of normalcy. So James, I want to throw it over to you. Did you have the opportunity to watch this TikTok? What did you think? And in general, do you think that this is a great way going forward to kind of educate people about scientific topics that might seem scary and complicated, and simplify them and make them fun and easy to digest?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, to be completely frank, I think Mara's previous example is a perfect example of that. You know, the mousetrap explaining fission. I think the YouTuber's name again? Oh. Krishna. I watched the video. I didn't have a great understanding of how the vaccine worked, so I ended up watching the video once. Then I watched and I read a blurb about how the vaccine works, and I went back and watched it again, and it became funnier because I had a base understanding of, you know, what the the mRNA does, proteins do. So I thought I think this approach is genius. I think it's something that, you know, like you mentioned earlier, Brandon, that we try to do weekly and try to, you know, dilute the topics a little bit to make them more approachable, and so all of us can learn and throw in our expertise on different topics. He has a great following too on TikTok. I watched a couple of his videos. Many of them are well over a million likes and views. So shout out to him. I thought this was hilarious. I thought it was effective, and his plot worked, because I have a great understanding of the vaccine now, and looking forward to getting it myself.
Yeah, awesome. And you know, like you said, like, it is great when people kind of like come together and share their expertise and their knowledge. And you know, it says here that Krishna works at NPR as the development and operations engineer in New York City. So he's clearly someone who has a background in obviously public radio, like being able to express yourself and like talk about something that could be complicated or maybe seem mundane, and try to make it digestible to like the everyday like listener, or like people are just like watching TikToks at home now. So it's really great to see. Mara, let's throw it over to you now. What were your overall thoughts on this? Did you have time to watch the TikTok? Did you enjoy it? Did you maybe learn something that you didn't already know about how these vaccines work? Or if you already did know how these vaccines work, do you think that this is something that is easily digestible to someone who's going in there not knowing immediately how these Moderna and Pfizer vaccines like help you, you know, build up an immunity to the virus?
I would like to thank Brandon Hanna for officially ruining my life, because I finally had to download TikTok. I could watch it. But yes, I did. And I was lucky enough that when I was in school that I took some epidemiology electives, because I'm a dork and I take science electives, because, you know, why take art when you can just learn about germs? So I fortunately did, as I followed the course of the pandemic, which Sam Levine is also another person who is incredibly well-versed as a, you know, we're relative laymen compared to someone who's actually gotten their degree in epidemiological research, et cetera. But that have had a lot of fun conversations, because we follow the science and understand it pretty well for, you know, again, laymen. But I think that this sort of thing, this is one of the things that social media, I think, that's the positive of it, because there's a whole lot of negatives. But I mean, science is the study of objective fact, and we interpret it and we have opinions on it and how it should be used and whether or not someone should or shouldn't do something. And I think that the biggest thing is arming yourself with information, because obviously I have my opinion on vaccination, and it's because I have the information to decide for myself, and so does everyone else. But I think that there is a lot of disinformation out there on a lot of different subjects, not just vaccines, but, and not even just climate change, but the fact that this is something that is designed to help arm yourself with information, even in its most basic sense, to understand what mRNA does and doesn't do, what proteins do and don't do, and whether or not this is something that, based on your medical provider's guidance, is or is not going to be something that is the right decision for you medically. I think that this is exactly the kind of stuff that people need to do. This is what TikTok should do. TikTok should just teach us about things that we may not fully grasp or understand. So I know that I was also very pleased to see that they're opening up more vaccinations in 16 plus across the country. So if it is something that you're interested in, please just do your research. And I've been vaccinated. So is Dan Merle. So is Dan Merle's mom. So and I'm still here. So just saying.
Yeah, no, that was very well said and well put. Like, you know, like, obviously, like, it is important to decide, you know. Obviously, like, I encourage, you know, everyone who can get a vaccine and can do it, you know, with their, you know, like you said, like, talk to your, like, you know, like a healthcare, you know, like, you know, your physician, like, you know, because obviously, like, different people have different health issues and stuff. And like, some people are able to take vaccines, some people aren't. And it all kind of depends on, like, it also depends on where you at, because, you know, some states, you know, have different eligibility requirements than others. So, you know, make sure you check in with that. If you are someone who does want to get the vaccine and you're eager, maybe you are eligible right now and you don't know it. So, you know, I'm still working, trying to schedule myself an appointment to get a vaccine. But it is an important issue. It's very topical. I mean, you hear it in the news every day. About vaccines and at what stage and, you know, eligibility and availability they're out there. So, and how effective they're proven to be for, like, different age groups and people in different, like, you know, health statuses, if you will. So it is important. And I think it is, it's always great to see someone go out there and kind of, like, take it upon themselves to be an educator and, like, and kind of ease some fear amongst people who maybe just, not that they're not, like, educated on the topic, but it is a complicated issue and they haven't kind of, like, found something that explained it well enough to them. So if someone could go out there and make TikToks, which you see, like, everyone is on TikTok these days, you know, so to just kind of, like, to just stumble across a video like that, you know, it could be the difference between whether or not someone decides to go and get a vaccine, because it could answer some questions. So I think it's great. If you guys don't necessarily download TikTok to watch this, unless I appreciate you doing that, Mara. But if you already have TikTok, you know, go check out this video and other videos. Apparently he's a very popular TikToker, as James said. So so I think that just about wraps up our show for today. We covered a wide variety of topics.
Talks again, please.
Oh, yes, of course. Go right ahead.
So this might actually help you out, Brandon. Now, I don't know exactly what areas this is implemented in, but it's worth checking out if you're interested in being vaccinated. There's a computer program that was written that helps pair people that are interested in being vaccinated with unused vaccines. Because once you start using a vial, you have to use it, or else it has to be disposed of by the end of the day. So in an effort not to waste any of the vaccine, if someone misses their appointment, you know, because maybe they've changed their mind or life happens, sometimes something else comes up, like, a, you know, maybe you get in a car accident, or if a relative needed something, you know, and you have to go, so they miss their appointment, it can pair up somebody who is maybe not eligible currently based on their state's requirements. So if they're not vaccinating 16 plus currently, they will, if you're in that geographic region where the place has an unused vaccine, they'll contact you and say, hey, we have a shot. Do you want a shot before the end of the day? Can you be here in an hour or something? So it's high drbhidrb.com. So you can register and see if it's in your area. And if not, you can also look at local pharmacies, like not your Walgreens and your CVS's, but like your more mom and pop regional pharmacies, because they also have their own wait lists that they have. So that's actually how Dan was able to get vaccinated, was by a wait list from a local pharmacy. So if you're interested in doing that, you might be able to get vaccinated ahead of your you know, age group or medical group, et cetera, just because occasionally things happen and people have to miss their appointments. So worth checking out.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm actually, I will check that out because it is, it has been like hard to kind of like figure out like where to go and what's the best place to try to like book an appointment. Or like, you know, I did hear that I've had a few friends that have been able to kind of like, you know, check in with a pharmacy and be like, oh yeah, like so-and-so missed their appointment. You know, if you come here before 5 o'clock, you know, you could have the vaccine. So, but you know, that can all kind of be like, you know, daunting, and you get so caught up in your life. It's hard to keep going at it. So I think a resource like that is going to be super useful, definitely to someone like me. So I think I will definitely check that out. And I encourage everyone to just kind of like get as much information as you can out there and make the decision that is right for you. So with all that being said, that does wrap up our show for today. It was super great to have both James and Mara here with me to talk about these great science news topics. Mara, let's go over to you. If the good people watching want to talk to you more about nuclear fission, where can they find you online?
I lurk on Twitter at ThatMara. I still don't understand Instagram, but I'm at ThatMaraLA because someone else decided to be ThatMara. I don't know who she is, but she's not me. And I occasionally lurk over on all things related to Dan Merle and the movie Trivia Schmodown. But my biggest takeaway, please consider doing something nice for someone else today. You have no idea what someone else is going through, and that can be a huge thing for somebody when they're going through something really bad. So spread kindness.
Yes, definitely. And thank you so much. James, if the good people watching, I know we didn't really talk about any plant stories today, but if anyone wants to get some advice on plants, I know Mara was talking about some succulents earlier before we went live. Where can they find you online?
While Mara is lurking, I'll be creeping over on Instagram at Terrell James Maple, and on Twitter below right here, James Maple Actor. And you can also catch me on AfterBuzz TV and Black Hollywood Live as a writer there as well. So look out for articles from me weekly.
Awesome. Great. Yeah, guys, definitely go support James. Go support Mara. Go support Dan Merle. And also, please come support me. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at BrandonHannah07. If you're already watching, you're already on my YouTube channel. But please, guys, hit that like button. Subscribe if you haven't done so already. It's really great to just kind of have you all here with us and talk about science on a weekly basis. I have a lot of fun doing it, even if I do stumble over my own words and say, where are you at, instead of where you're at.
Such a GIF-worthy thing. Please, someone make that.
Yeah, just clip it out.
Yeah, I think I see BCD in the chat. He's already on it. I feel like that he wants it on a t-shirt. I could just tell. Maybe one day, but not today. But as far as today goes, I don't know how I was going to make that transition, but you know, I'm going to say the same thing that I always do every week, and that is, thank you for taking time out of your day for this moment of science.